Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for tuning in and spending the next, well, I hope you spend the next hour, maybe, well, no, 48 minutes with us. After we get us, it's an hour, but it's not an hour. But yeah, thanks for tuning in. How you doing? School's tough.
It's not to school now.
Oh, yeah, now you got the ride-alongs. Oh, boy, the ride-alongs, folks. 12-hour shifts in an ambulance.
There's some crazy people in Spartanburg County. There's some really crazy people.
But then again, there's some real work out there for you, isn't it?
Oh, gosh. Well, there's a need for people to work right now for EMS. But, yeah, there's a lot to do in EMS right now.
So, you're here for this first segment, then we're going to cut you loose to go study.
Love studying.
Love studying, but I do need your help for the first segment.
Yes, you do. We have a very big calendar, right?
We do have it. I don't even want to talk about it this week. The mental picture I have in my head of this doe. And this hunting a new place and
Before you tell the story.
I'm not going to tell the story because I don't want to.
Okay.
Well, I just have the mental picture.
Well, let's just put it this way. You had a chance and you missed it. So rules, the unwritten laws of deer hunting.
Wait just a
dog. That if you had your chance, that is now somebody else's deer.
No, ma'am.
Yes, it is. That's.
Deer. I don't have to worry about you because you're in school.
No, I'm going to be over there next week.
Oh, you are.
Oh, yeah. As much as I can be. Thursday, for sure.
I did something that I haven't done in a very, very long time, and that's miss.
You missed a really good buck.
I missed a really good buck. Like a new place. At least 10. At least 10, maybe a little bigger.
He's mine now.
I mean, I got to watch him for probably 15 minutes. It's funny how a big buck like that, even though he is, I mean, and he was obvious, this doe, I saw her first, and then he comes up behind her, and his head, he's looking ahead, and then he turns and looks at her, which is looking at me, and I put my binoculars down. I'm like, I don't need to see anymore. I never counted the points, well outside the ears. Good tying length, looked fairly symmetrical, but, you know, it's just one of those you don't have to think twice about. But even a buck like that, when he is focused on a doe, he is still a cagey booger. Mm-hmm. He got in some tall grass and got behind some scattered trees, and I could see a little bit here and a little bit there, but he was not standing in the wide open like she was. So, anyway, come to find out, the gun was off.
Oh, love that.
Yeah. So, anyway, it all happens, but, yeah, gosh, you have nightmares and all about things you missed and stuff like that, but it was probably 28 or 29 degrees. The frost had burned off the grass. Sun was shining on them. It was just a beautiful scene. And even though I missed, I mean, that scene and that is just, it's just burned into my memories. And I think that's why we go outside.
You still missed, though.
I did miss. Your uncle he was in another stand fairly close by. And he goes, I assume that's you. I said, yeah, it was me. He said, well, I said.
It's three times.
I don't think I hit him. He goes, really? Three shots. You don't think you hit him? I'm like,
no.
Nope. He never really noticed he was being shot at either. And it wasn't just him or the doe. There was more with him, and they never even really reacted to the shots either.
What if it was a ghost deer?
No, it was not a ghost deer.
You sure
he was
that?
Real. Because I found his tracks.
You sure?
I know where his bedroom
you sure you
is.
Weren't just
I know like, where his bedroom is now.
You sure you weren't just.
That's the fun part is when a plan comes together.
Uh-huh.
And now I know exactly what he's doing. what they're doing.
You had your chance. That is my deer now.
With five or six does, I don't see him moving very far in the next week.
That's my deer.
The trouble is, I get over there before you get over there, so.
Watch him not come out when you're over there and come out when I come over there.
It could be.
Did you check the
joy of deer hunting. You just never know.
Did you check the salt lick?
No, I did not.
Did you look at my lucky buck?
No, I did not.
My crushed persimmons?
I did not.
Dang it, honey.
I'm not going to help you.
Yeah, I don't want to ask for help. I was just asking
if I checked stuff for you.
I was just wondering if there was any signs.
I'm not
going to
help you deer hunt.
Deer.
Oh, that's up to you.
Well, you know what? Next week, then. Next week.
All right. Stuff. All right, so we got a calendar to get to.
We do.
Whew. So I'm sure those of you out there with memories like that, you'll understand. But that is the beauty of being out there. If I'd been asleep, none of that had ever happened. And I'll take the miss because the morning and all was just, it's just a great morning. Just an absolute great morning. And like I said, I figured them out. I know exactly what they're doing now. And, you know, if he stays around too much longer, he's going to be one of us. All right, so the calendar events brought to you by Capital City.
Lake Murray Country.
Tri-County Department of Natural Resources has not one but two free deer hunters for members of the military community in memory of U.S. Army Special Thomas Coffin. Hunts will be held at Cowden Plantation on November 11th and December the 2nd, open to active, retired, reserved, and disabled military members chosen by drawing. And you get a tour of Jarrett Rifles, too. Which is cool. So the applications are due on October 30th. Kaufman Veteran Hunt at dnr.se.gov. That's the application.
DNR.
I had to mute you for that.
DNR is hosting a hands-on deer clinic. We've already missed one of them. It was October 19th in Edgefield, but there's two more coming up, November 16th in Richland County, and December 14th, they're back in Edgefield. You can go to DNR website to sign up. I'm not sure what the deadline is, but it sounds like a pretty cool opportunity.
Yeah. October news from South Carolina Ducks Unlimited. There's a couple of banquets coming up on October the 27th, the York County Fall Banquet, Meadowview Events in McConnell, South Carolina, 6 p.m., the Carolina Chapter Fall Banquet in Columbia is going to be at the Carolina Haven at 6:30 p.m. on the 27th. And on the 28th, Anderson University Banquet at the Athletic Campus Pavilion at 5:30 p.m. You can go to SCDU and get more information.
There's an event being held by Ann Springs Closed Gate Greenway. Goodness, I still can't talk.
All right.
Called the October Camp Out. It's Friday, October 28th, starting at 4:30 in Fort Mill, South Carolina. You can go to their website to get the exact address, but they're going to be having a big bonfire, dinner by the fire, s'mores. There's going to be a maze. There's a whole bunch of stuff they're going to be doing, so it sounds pretty fun. I kind of want to go. I want to go camping.
Yeah, I want a fire. Featherhorn Farm presents the 2022 Duck Cup Saturday, October the 29th. It's a 100 clay event, 12 station course. Course opens at 8 a.m. and you must be on the course by 1:30. Entry fees $375, team of three. Go to featherhornfarm.com for more information.
Upper Savannah Land Trust is having their fifth annual Sporting Clays for Conservation shoot Friday, October 28th. Another October 28th, 8:30 to 2 p.m. You can have a team of four shooters. They're going to have breakfast, barbecue, lunch, games, prizes. There is a fee if you're not shooting, $30. Sponsorship's available, but it's going to be at the Pomona Shooting Complex in Edgefield.
If you're around the Greenville area on the 29th, you're going to have some warbird static displays. I think you even have some rides going on. So the Greenville Downtown Airport, I'm a runway junkie from way back, and this is just one of them. You got something because we got to end this thing.
Okay, Kiwi Taxway Park.
You don't have time.
What?
We're out of time.
Oh, come on.
All right, go study. Hunter Bridges is coming in. We're going to talk wildlife photography. Hang in there with me. More Woods and Water, South Carolina on the other side. Well, welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. My co-host is gone to study. It's I think I remember what that was like. Somewhere in the back of my head, I have these nightmares about studying. But I think actually what it was I dreaded going to class the next day because I hadn't studied because I'd been doing something I shouldn't have been doing the day before, like hunting and fishing or something like that. And so it wasn't like I was really stressed out about studying. It was like I didn't study anyway, so what am I worried about? But I worried about flunking. So that could be me, but she's not like that. She's got her goals, and she's focused, and that's good. So I give her a pass on that. She'll be back with us next week. And in the meantime, on really short notice, folks, because this week's calendar turned upside down in a real hurry because of my birthday party with one of my other guests that was supposed to be on. And Hunter had actually – we messaged like a few days ago because when you were on and we were talking about the quail thing, we mm-hmm. got in this whole discussion about photography and Wild Carolina and all that. And we were like, okay, we need to do this again. And your message to me was, hey, let's don't forget about this. So I tag you're it. And here you are.
Here I am. I'm glad to be.
Yeah. And last time we were on, we were talking, you know, the Quail Forever gig that you have here in South Carolina, and and we're not going to spend much time on that, but I tell you what I'm hearing.
Sure.
And not just from other quail people, I'm hearing a lot of people say, I heard a quail the other day.
I'm just grinning from ear to ear to hear that.
And these are random people who know I love quail.
Yeah.
And as we talk, especially during deer season, a lot of people are in the woods and all, and they're posting saying, hey, man, I heard a bobwhite whistle tonight. I jumped into a covey here to scare myself to death or something like that. And these are not people who are worried about quail hunting or planning for quail or quail habitat management.
I'm so happy to hear that.
These are just guys with property who say, I'm seeing more quail.
I'm hearing the same thing, especially on these sites where habitat, upland habitat restoration is taking place. These birds are responding, man. And it's so encouraging.
That's just, I guess I got chills.
I know, right?
It's like a weird thing. I mean, between you and me, it's not, but I wonder how many people just started going, I don't know if I want to listen to the rest of this show with these two on here or not.
Oh, no. Hey, man, I get chills. I'm in the first.
But the folks, if you're listening out there and you're thinking, okay, these two are really off the deep end, you got to understand, these are our roots. I mean, this is our passion. We deer hunt, we duck hunt, we do whatever it is outdoors. But from my early childhood, quail was, and they say the happiest times of your life are the things you remember most, which just makes sense. And it seems like some of the happiest times of my life were behind a bird dog with my neighbor Kenneth. I mean, you know. Those Absolutely. Were the carefree days, no worries, just how many coveys are we going to find today, and, you know, watching that bird, you know, is the dog going to be better than she was? Did she learn from the lesson we taught her last, you know? So it's not like we're weird or anything, it's just, you know.
Well, maybe we are. But
well, we
okay.
could be, but anyway. But, yeah, I'm hearing it from a lot of people.
No, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm hearing it from a lot of people, and it's really – like you said, I mean, it seems like the birds are really responding to whatever happens right now.
Yeah. And it's not just bobwhite quail. The way I see it is, I know this isn't our topic. We won't
talk a whole lot.
But, so it would be very easy to do. It's about more than just bobwhite quail. I mean, that's sort of the banner, under which we're restoring these upland habitat areas. But, man, so many other species, game and like are responding. I mean, the deer activity I'm seeing on these quail focal areas is incredible. I mean, hey, if I want to manage for white-tailed deer, I'm going to do what I do for quail. And I'm serious. Yeah.
And the rabbits are coming with that. And, you know, your songbirds are coming after that. And pollinators.
These species that are a lot of which are struggling. Man, they're responding well.
Yeah. Michael Hook. I said something profound to Michael Hook one time. And he just like in silence, he was just like, "Wow, that's pretty good." I said, "Michael, when you manage for small game, it's almost like you manage for all game."
You're right.
And I was like, "Okay, I'm done. Mic drop. Let's
there
just
you go.
Shut it
Mike,
down."
Mike, yep.
No, it's all good. We'll have you back on for some updates later on the quail and other stuff and all. But photography, you know, the last time we had you on, we started off air, I think, talking about photography. You were talking about Wild Carolina that you know, you used to be almost a professional photographer, and I'm a hack, but I love to take pictures too. A lot of people love to take pictures. A lot of people would like to take better pictures.
Yeah.
And so when we were talking about this, we were like, let's start out with just like an easy to understand beginner level tips on maybe how to take a better picture, regardless of what kind of camera you got.
That's absolutely right. And you know, even though this is, and you said it correctly, this would be, you know, maybe considered entry level information, but you would carry, I carry this, these five things I want to discuss here are things I'm thinking about every time I hit the shutter button, literally. So, I mean, even now, any photographer, you know, the more you do it, the more you start to really think about these elements and realize how much they impact your photography. So, these are five things that I think really would, are going to help anybody. Again, like you said, regardless of your camera equipment, I started out with, like, you know, anybody, with a very basic point and shoot camera.
Sure.
And went through some frustrations with it. Obviously it was not a high performing DSLR and all that, but I learned to sort of work with the camera and learn to apply these techniques, and my photography went up, the quality and composition of my images went up significantly. In fact, the first image I ever had published came from a point and shoot camera.
Wow.
U.S. Fish and Wildlife used it. And in fact, it was a copperhead. I stuck my camera lens in its face. That's a, anyway, long story.
That could be bordering on. Really,
it was worth it. I had my hands behind the camera body, you can imagine. But, hey, it was worth it. It was a cool shot.
I bet.
But, I guess the first thing, I maybe I should leave this to last because I think it's the most important. Number one, think about the subject's eye. Get eye level. Okay. It's so often that I see images, especially people wanting to shoot down at something, maybe a duck on the water or a bird in their yard or whatever.
Okay.
Part of what you're trying to do, or at least I think when you're photographing wildlife is to bring the viewer something they don't see often. Bring them some intensity, some emotion. You're pretty much not going to get that shooting down. You just lose the intimacy with the subject. If you will take that, keep that in mind. If you have to squat down or whatever you need to do, get eye level with your subject, and your image, the composition quality of your images is going to go up significantly. And to that, I would add, well, let me also say, you might say, well, what about shooting up? Sometimes you have to.
Sure.
But shooting up does not subjugate the subject as much as shooting down does. It just, you can get by with shooting up. So I'll just leave it at that. That's a little bit different discussion. But shooting down on the subject just compromises quality. That the subject's eye, I've heard it said that if the subject's eye is not in focus, the entire image is out of focus. I don't care if you have the feathers tack sharp or fur tack sharp, whatever. If that eye is not, if you can't see, well, if it's depending on how far it is from the camera,
sure.
you want to see a crystal clear eye. And that is so true. The more I do this, the more, and the more I evaluate my own images, and I'm probably more critical of my stuff than anyone else. And that's one thing I want to see. If that eye is not tack sharp, I don't care how cool a shot it is. It's going in the trash. It's hit the delete button.
All right. On Wild Carolina, you have a picture of a frog climbing some, I don't know what it looked. I don't know what this is. Could be, it's not cut grass.
Else.
But the eye. The eye is shiny. It's sharp.
I know the one you're thinking of. That was with a point and shoot camera.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the eye, but the grass in between you and the frog is where the blur is, and that frog, his eye, boom.
I worked really hard for that. I remember to this day working, so because that was before I had the kind of camera equipment I have now. I worked really hard for that shot. I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah.
And to this day, and I just want to bring that back up, you know, hey, that's still on my website. I'm shooting much higher end equipment than I had back then. That one's still on my website.
Sure.
Darn picture.
Yeah.
And so again, you know, you don't have to have, you know, the latest technology, but yeah, you're right. That eye is sharp. Had it not right. been, the whole image would
that's
be,
right.
would, you know, compromised yeah. at the very least. It would not be as impactful.
Yeah. Got about a minute and a half till we have to take a break. So be careful what you get started on.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll wrap it up with this. If you, you know, if you're in order to get that sharp eye, most cameras, this is the only remotely technical aspect I'm going to go into in this talk, but most cameras have an autofocusing or autofocusing settings. It might be single point or group AF, all these sorts of things.
Right.
If you're going with all that, I single point is almost always what I use because I can put that little square in the center of my frame as I'm looking through the camera, put that square on the eye as I'm eye level with the subject and hit the shutter button. That is, if I had to pick one, a single most important component, that would be it.
The eye is it.
The eye is it. Get that eye right. Get eye level and get it sharp.
That copperhead picture may be on this front page here too.
I can't remember. I haven't even been on.
He's coiled up. His head's kind of raised up a little bit. He's not really yeah. at you, but it's a look. When I scroll through and I saw the copperhead, I kind of stepped back a little bit. I'm like, okay, that's way too close for me.
I should say this, but I came across that snake. He was in really poor light. I took my fanny pack off, very carefully put him in there, zipped him up, took him to the top of a hardwood ridge with sunlight hitting just the way I wanted it, dropped in there, picked him off to make him coil up, and that's how I shot that.
Okay.
You got to want it bad.
We may need to question your sanity at some point.
But hey, I got the shot.
You got the shot. That's exactly right. So starting
snake,
off.
He went off on his own. I left him alone after that.
The eye is it, folks. Get out, and it may be hard. It's not the easiest thing. I'm 55. It's kind of hard for me to get down low and get a shot. But you're right. Those shots tend to be better than especially just shooting down at everything.
Yeah, so. Especially close.
Yeah, that's right, especially close. Wow, you got four more of those. We need to hurry it up.
Yeah, I'm going
to.
We'll move along.
The most important one you take the most time on. So
That's right. Are we going to break now? Or do
yeah,
you want
yeah, yeah. Hang on, okay. Folks. We'll be back after the break with more Woods and Water, South Carolina. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It's a subject that I've wanted to talk about for a while, probably 6 or 7 years now. Hunter Bridges has been good enough to donate some of his experience and advice, and because he's a great photographer, from what I can see. I'd like to be a better one. So I asked him if we could do something on photography. Worked out this week. So we got the first segment in, you know, get the eye in focus. The camera, the picture will follow.
That's right.
And you said five of these. So we got to get through two of this segment. We'll leave off messing with the quail. We got that plug in the first segment.
That's our rabbit hole not to go down.
That's yeah, right.
So the second thing I wanted to talk about was getting close. You know, I have to preface this by saying, of course, don't do anything. Don't get too close. Don't put yourself in danger and don't harass the animal. Okay. So as long as within reason, use common sense, but in all seriousness, there is no substitute for getting close. You might say, well, you know, hey, you can crop later or whatever. No, you're going to pull out all that ISO noise. If you know what I mean, bottom line, it's going to pull out. It's going to make your image a lot more grainy.
That's right.
It's going to soften the whole image, and that's not a good thing. So get as close as you can. That being said, very often you're going to end up having to crop anyway.
Sure.
But don't rely on that. Get as close as you reasonably can. And that also allows you, going back to point one a little bit, to get that catch light in the eye, that little reflection, that little white dot in the eye. That will that adds so much to an image.
And hey, you know, part of the fun And let's take it. Photography is fun.
Absolutely.
I have a ball taking pictures. It doesn't matter if I'm, I love to plant Egyptian wheat because the cardinals will get on the head upside down, eating the seed out. And I just think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And I have a ball doing it. So part of photography is having fun. And what better fun is trying to actually stalk up on your subject without spooking it, getting close, or sitting there in a blind until they get close enough to you, either one.
Of it. Yeah. Hey, if you love to hunt, there's no closed season or bag limit on photography.
That's exactly right.
You can, and I have, there are times when I know of properties that are, you know, completely shut down to hunting. And, you know, of course, you know, there are times where I would love to hunt it, but, you know, I know that's not going to happen. But I have gone and knocked on so many doors and said, hey, Hunter Bridges, you know, Wild Carolina, blah, blah, blah. Would you mind if I photograph your property? If I've ever been told no, I don't remember it. I don't think I've ever been told no.
Do you get many weird looks when you do that?
I never took weird. I have a card, and, yeah, you know, with my website and everything. It's always, yeah, go ahead. You know, either, you know, shut the gate when you leave, and of course that would go without saying, that sort of thing. But yeah, the access you have to other properties is really a lot of fun.
And I'm sure with that getting close, sometimes you got to let the picture come to you.
We're going to talk a little bit about that.
Whoopsie.
no, you're right. A little foreshadowing there. I can go with that.
All right. We'll
jump ahead. I think we'll wrap up on getting close. I think we've made that point. There, cropping is not a substitute. Get as close as you reasonably and safely can, safely for your sake and the animal's sake.
Is there any, in your experience, is there any trick to getting close, or is it just sometimes you win, sometimes you lose?
That's a good question. You mentioned, if we're talking like game species, I'm going to spend a minute on this. Yes, camouflage, get in the blind, that sort of thing. Basically stalk them as though you just like you were turkey or deer hunting, right?
Okay.
Except don't get in the deer stand because you're shooting down. be concealed, be ready. And that's, hey, hunters have an outstanding background and skill set for photography, whether they use a camera or not. The skill set is there.
Right.
So there's that for getting close. What about birds? I'm going to share something I've noticed a little bit. Maybe a little anecdotal, but I don't like camouflage when I'm photographing birds. I feel like I get closer if I wear a muted color, like white would be fine, a light blue, something that allows them to see me very well. I don't want them to think that, hey, this thing could disappear and sneak up on me and eat me at any moment. You know, I feel like they allow me to get a little closer if they can keep an eye on me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So sure. Like when I'm after warblers or other birds, I do kind of usually actually stay away from the camouflage. So that was a good question. I'm glad you brought that up.
All right.
Number three, watch your backgrounds. This is
one,
very easy to forget about because you're so focused on the subject, right?
Right.
But like, I'll give an example. I see this all the time. People, you know, photographing wildlife in their backyard, which is one of the best places to do it. Nothing wrong with that. I do that.
Okay, right. So
that's a great place to do it. But, you know, you end up with, hey, you know, there's your bird feeder, your hummingbird feeder in the background. There's your cropped, you know, your urban lawn. There's your trimmed hedges. Look, that, if we're talking wildlife photography, you're taken away from it with that. So think about what's in your background. Another thing I'll touch on, this is a lot tougher to actually apply, but complementary colors. You know, I have a lot of images where the subject looks great. I'm thinking of one right now. I have a coyote, really cool shot. He's looking directly at me, but it was spring. He had a nice winter coat on, but the background was green. The grass was green, of course.
Okay.
That coyote in the grass just clashed. I tossed it.
Really?
Yes, I that's something I want to think about. I try to think about, you know, complementary colors. What's in my background? Does it complement the entire composition? With wildlife, you're talking about subjects that are already, generally speaking, trying to get away from you anyway. So it's really hard to, you can't tell them where to stand, right?
Right.
Do what you can. And I wouldn't say this is the most important thing, but it is very much worth considering.
Do you want to deaden your background a little bit when you're photographing wildlife?
When you say dim, do you mean like blurred?
No. Just like you talked about how green the background on the coyote was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that something you want to watch? Do you want to mute your backgrounds as much as possible?
Oh, I see. Like processing.
Yeah.
You absolutely could. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's a whole post processing is another discussion. And there's nothing. Post processing, by the way, has gone on long before.
I wasn't talking about that. I was just talking about when you're setting up for a shot.
Oh, yes.
Do you want to intentionally choose a background where you?
That's a good point. Absolutely. When you can.
When you can.
You can't always do that, but yes, when you can, by all means, that's something very good to think about. And if it's something like maybe a butterfly or something that may allow you to move around a little bit.
Okay.
Move to another angle. Get the cropped lawn out of the background.
Okay.
Or whatever the case may be. If you see, maybe it's a viceroy or a monarch or something, and you know, those oranges clash with something in the background. Hey, you know, grab a different angle, and it's something like that. You can oftentimes do that. Yeah.
Get low and shoot up sometimes.
Yeah. Absolutely. Watch your metering. That can be,
okay.
That a lot of times your camera will want to meter for the sky.
Okay. If you,
I know I'm getting a little more technical here. We're not going to go way down this road, but that's in a situation like that, drop your shutter speed or raise your ISO or something, because the camera's going to try to meter for the sky, expose the sky correctly, and then your butterfly or whatever is almost black.
Okay.
So yeah, but you're not in terms of composition, you're not wrong. Yes, that would be a great idea. And as long as you mind your metering, yes, that's what I would try to do.
So in a minute and a half that I took away from you talking about
what
I would finish up with your background stuff in about a minute then. So what do you want to do with your background now?
Yeah. So, you know, we talked about, I think the number one thing is make sure the background works with or complements or is consistent with your composition.
Okay.
You know, I think a lot about complementary colors, and maybe I'm splitting hairs a little bit there, but it's, I think it does add something, or adds a lot to your image when you can get that right, when you can. The last thing is, and Harry, I'm going a little bit more technical than we wanted to, but just I'll throw it in there. And if you're not familiar with what I'm talking about, then don't worry about it.
Okay.
Your aperture.
Yes.
A fast aperture. Your aperture just refers to how big around your shutter opens. So, a fast aperture would be a really, it opens up to a big circle, exposing your whole sensor to film. And a slow aperture opens up into a smaller hole. A faster aperture is going to blur that background. That's going to give you what you would call background separation. So your subject is really tack sharp. Portrait people are really, well, everybody's really big on this if you can afford a lens fast enough to do it, but you know, where you have the face in perfect focus and everything's real blurry in the background,
right. Yes,
that's deliberately with a like f2.8 or something, f2.8, maybe 1.4 or something like that. When you can do that, most lenses that people use are going to start at 5.6 f5.6. You're not going to get a lot of background blur. Some of it's going to depend on where you're subject is with respect to the background, but shoot with as low an aperture and just remember that part, whether you understand the technical aspect or not.
All right.
Shoot with as low an aperture as you can.
All right, y'all hang on. We'll be back. More Woods and Water, South Carolina. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Thanks for tuning in. As always, it's good to have you here. It's you know, Kevin Cohen from down in the down at 100.7 WQXL, the point down in Columbia, asked me the other day. He asked me to call in and talk about the Black Bass World Championships that are going on down at Lake Murray this weekend, or last weekend this weekend. And he was talking, he said, you know, what are people going to hear when they tune into your show? And I said, frankly, you'll never know. And like I said last night, this is one of those that I've always wanted to do. I've just never gotten around to it. And Hunter, I appreciate so much you taking your time,
yeah,
and sharing your expertise. And this we agree, this is kind of going to be some generalities that you can start working on. I think you and I are kind of the same mind that on down the road we're going to try to do some more specific stuff, maybe with the call in aspect.
That would be great. Sure.
So. But, yeah, again, thanks for doing this.
Technical or offer a little bit more technical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's all going to be good, folks. So you just never know what you're going to hear when you tune in. And that's the fun of doing this show. And it's the joy of having good guests that know what they're talking about and love to share it. So it all works together. All right. So when you left off that last segment, we were talking about background and how fast your shutter speed moved and the one. And, take that one more time and just make sure everybody's got it.
That may have gotten a little jumbled, and it's not the simplest. It's a lot easier to illustrate with like actual illustrations. But so your aperture refers to how big around the opening is that's exposing to your film or camera sensor or whatever. I'm just going to just really simplify this and say a lower number is going to give you more background separation. In other words, the background is way out of focus and your subject is, if you do your job right, perfectly in focus.
Right.
Portrait shots would be a great example of something like that. They're very, very big on that. The face, eyes, everything is in focus, and then the background is really blurred out. Okay. Let's say you're taking a landscape shot. Well, you know, you might kick your aperture. You would say slow it down or bump it up to like a 7.1 or 8 or so.
Okay.
And you don't want the background separation. You may want you're going to want a wide depth of field, so you have the grass in the foreground that's really that's tack sharp, and you have this old farmhouse in 200 yards away or whatever that it's also sharp, right?
Gotcha.
That's what your aperture allows you to control. How deep is the field of focus, right?
Gotcha. Perfect sense. Perfect sense. All right. So you got two more. You talked about five to begin with. We covered three of them. Last two.
Yes. This is a really big one, I think. And it's a real common something I see often in a lot of photography. Wait for your subject to do something interesting. I mean, we're part of the joy of wildlife photography is bringing people, closer to nature, showing people, an aspect of nature, maybe if they're not used to seeing. Well, I've used the example like of a deer standing in a field and like you snap a picture of it. I mean,
we've all seen
that, that's not, maybe there's a great sunset in the back. Okay.
Sure.
But you get my point. I mean, honestly, that's just not that special. I've heard one person say, what makes a photo special? If it makes you look twice at it, I'm not looking twice at that.
Okay.
Right. And I don't think anybody would.
What's going to make you look twice?
Sure. Wait, let's stick with the deer example. Here's this deer in a field. Wait for it to do something. And it will, maybe it twists a certain way and maybe lifts its back leg and scratches under its chin. They'll do it like that. Seriously.
That was what I was just thinking about. Cause I've watched deer do that.
Exactly. Get something like that. And, a duck on the water is another example, especially when people want to shoot down. Like, here's a mallard sitting on the water. Like, I mean, come on, that's not that interesting. Maybe there's a great reflection or something that could be, your compositional hanging point. But wait for that. You know how they love to, get up and flap their wings.
Oh, they're going to preen or do something. That. Yes.
He'll do something.
Yeah.
And if you're getting started, one of my favorite subjects is a great blue heron. They're extremely photogenic.
Yes.
And they're just intense, man. Oh, you don't have to watch one of those for long before you're going to get some interesting shots.
I have a lot of professional fishermen as friends, and You'll be riding down the lake, and they'll see one, and they go, "There's the best fisherman in the world right over there."
They are, and hey, that's a So you don't. That's a good point. You won't wait long before you have one bringing a fish up out of the water with water dripping off of its feet. And you know, I mean, it's such a great. It's so much fun to hit those things. So, you know, if you're starting to maybe apply these techniques and you want to get one an easy subject, or I shouldn't put it that way. I love shooting them myself, photographing them myself. Go photograph a great blue heron. A lot of fun.
And they're abundant. It's not like you got to hunt for them. They're pretty much everywhere.
Yeah. Maybe this is like the opposite of that, in my opinion, is a black bear. They don't do anything.
No.
I love seeing them. They're so much fun to see. And I'm very excited when I see them, but I'm not excited looking at the images of them later. They just, I don't know, maybe it's just me. They don't have the intensity.
It's just a black ball of fur, and they're very rarely in a hurry to do anything.
Yeah, I have one good shot of a sow with her cubs kind of looking down at me in a tree. Yeah, that one's okay, but other than that, they just kind of amble around. and they're hard on your autofocus too, because it's hard to lock. It's hard for your autofocus systems to lock on a black subject. But
yes.
Anyway. But yeah, that's just kind of a funny side note. Yeah, in my opinion, black bears are boring subjects to photograph, but I love seeing them.
Gotcha.
Lastly, I hope we're okay on time here.
Still got 5 minutes.
Okay, very good. This one's maybe a little hard to convey, but I'll do the best I can. If you're just getting into this and you don't have, a high-end DSLR with, you know, the latest, greatest, fastest lenses and all that, And very few people do. I mean, we're talking, you know, your highest end lenses. I mean, you can easily drop $20,000
sure.
on a single lens, and you know, $7,000 or $8,000 or $6,000 or $7,000 on a camera body. I mean, honestly, how many people can do that?
Right.
You know, if you're just starting out with maybe a, you know, an entry level DSLR, a point and shoot, work with your camera, and not against it. And what I mean by that, if you have maybe an entry level. I don't know if I'm allowed to say brands or not.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'm not picking on any, I'm just like say Canon or Nikon, like your Canon Rebel or your Nikon, like your D3000 series,
yeah.
3000, 3100, 3500, whatever. And those are, I had the Nikon D3000. I can't remember which one it was anyway. So, you know, I know what it's like to work with those machines, and honestly, you know, you're not going to pick up, say, a Canon Rebel or one of your Nikon D3000s and just rip shots off a wood duck screaming through the timber in low light. It's not going to happen.
Okay.
Like as much as you want it to, it's just not. So, and those entry level DSLRs are very sensitive to low light. In other words, they're very grainy, very grainy, even in ISOs under 600 or so.
Okay.
So watch your, you know, if you have something like that and you're getting really grainy images, you just need more light. So, you know, find subject instead of getting out there and trying to, you know, photograph maybe a deer in the hardwoods, you know, and late in the afternoon, as beautiful it is, as it is to your eye, that camera is just going to really struggle with that. Find something, you know, work on times maybe a little bit later in the morning, a little bit earlier in the evening when you have a little bit more, or, you know, more light enough to clean up, to keep your ISO down low. And I hope I'm just going to take for granted that people have a sense of what I mean by that.
Okay.
If you don't have a sense of what I mean by that, just know that if you're getting grainy images, you need more light.
Okay.
Now you can slow your shutter speed down, but with wildlife, we're generally not finding. We're trying to keep them, you know, keep them high. So work with your camera. When I had, you know, let's go back to the frog picture you mentioned. That was with a Canon PowerShot. Man, I worked forever on that. I mean, it took me several days to shoot those frogs, and I finally got the right shot. Now, you know, with my Nikon D500 and the, you know, 500 millimeter lens I have.
That
would be, you know, but hey, I had to work really hard for that shot, but I worked with my camera, and as soon as I started doing that, I got a lot better pictures and the image quality, in terms of, by that, I mean, you know, how clear it is and how smooth it is, really went up significantly, you know, when you're working with it and not against it.
I'm assuming there's a lesson here that as you move up, you learn that lesson. When you move up, you immediately apply that to the new one, and the enjoyment's still there.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. Yeah. And even, I'm very lucky to have the camera system I have, and it has limitations. I mean, you know, wildlife photography asks a lot of a camera system.
Oh, it does.
High shutter speeds, very often lower light than what we really need against subjects that are generally trying to stay away from us if they know we're there. So it asks a lot of a camera system, and especially if you're working with an entry level camera, hey, get out in your backyard in ample light and try to get eye level with that with that blue jay and get a good shot, sharp, you know, keep its eye in focus, get eye level with it, get a good background, make sure you're close enough so you're not having to crop a lot, and you're going to start producing images that are really pretty. You know, wait for that blue jay to do something.
Sure.
That's where the fun comes in. Yep. not working against your camera trying to push it to do, like, you know, produce a Nat Geo cover photo,
because that's a frustration level, because you're not going to get it.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Although, I mean, hey, maybe you come across that, you know, a rare species or something,
there,
or
there you
get really special shot of a blue jay doing something. I'll hit that point again. with that entry level DSLR, it happens all the time. A lot of the pictures on my website came from what is practically a point and shoot camera.
Wow.
So, but that happened when I learned to work with it and not against it.
You know, there's a second frog in the frog picture. go look at it. It is. Hunter, thanks for your time, man. Always fun talking to you. Folks, we're going to do this again with some more stuff. In the meantime, take time to get out there. Don't forget the back roads, or take it when you can. And don't forget the camera. We'll see you back next week. More Woods and Water, South Carolina. Yes, I'm gone, Carolina.